Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Ready!
Buffalo Bills game day on the Buffalo Bills radio network.
All right, here we go. We got to have a drive.
23 left. Will.
Now, with the Dunn Tire Roundtable, here's Shope and the Bulldog.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our broadcast, Countdown to Kickoff. Hi, new people all over the world who are joining us here, Buffalo and Rochester. We've been talking about this game for hours, but now we really need to make it good. The Bills and the Titans, 8:15. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. The Bills and Titans with John Murphy and Eric Wood calling the play-by-play from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. Today's broadcast presented by Original Pizza Logs, official finger food of the Buffalo Bills. Now is here is again where I mentioned what the weather is like in Nashville, even though I'm not there. It's brought to you by Sullivan's Brewing Company. From Ireland to Buffalo, the best ales in the world. I'm told by multiple sources that the weather in Nashville is just about perfect. High 60s, mid 60s, dropping a little bit through the game naturally, but clear skies and no wind. Bulldog, how would that do? You go to Nashville like everybody else you know.
Love it.
You'd like to have it be a nice night.
It's perfect. It sounds perfect. Especially the no wind. I mean, no precipitation is nice too, but I think no wind is ideal. Let's fill the air with footballs.
Let's check in with our cohorts here as we begin our Dunn Tire Roundtable, brought to you by Dunn Tire, the official tire of the Buffalo Bills. Joining us from Nashville, Chris Brown, co-host of One Bills Live, Bills Insider for BuffaloBills.com, and Eric Wood, color commentator for tonight's game, host of the appropriately named podcast, What's Next with Eric Wood. Eric, is this location better for you than last week?
Yeah, we have a great view. This is actually one of my favorite broadcast booths I've ever been in. Open air, so we get to actually feel the game this week. Last week we were closed off and nine stories high, and so a little different perspective this week.
How about you, Chris? This will work?
It works. It's one of the better stadiums, one of the few stadiums that still has a low-level press box as well as a broadcast booth. Baltimore is one of the others, and that's about it in the AFC. So yeah, they're becoming fewer and further between.
I imagine those have been replaced with premium seats for people who want to pay as opposed to media who want to just sit in there and eat and drink free food and coffee.
What if the media are willing to pay? Shouldn't they get to sit there still? I think
I don't know if you're going to get anybody to pay, though.
No, maybe not. Well, from your experience and knowledge here, from what you've seen this weekend, Chris, do you expect this to sound and feel like a Bills home game?
Well, I mean, I'll have to give credit first to NewYorkUpstate.com for putting the report together, but I guess Vivid Seats, one of those secondhand ticket companies, they have some kind of algorithm they ran on tonight's game, and they've got it forecasted at 58% Bills fans to 42% Titans fans. I don't know how legitimate their algorithm is, but I guess we're going to find out in about an hour and a half.
Bills fans probably likelier to be louder, too, at least at the start. You're making this kind of trip, Eric. You're expecting to get into it.
Expecting to get in what?
Into the game. I mean, you're not going to go to Nashville from here, buy tickets, buy airfare, and then just sit there.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, as many Bills fans I saw out and about yesterday, there's no way that they can all get seats unless I was telling Chris Brown earlier, to me, it's got to be 65, 70% Bills fans with the amount of people that I've seen out and about. It's truly a takeover of a city.
Yeah, I mean, you experienced it as a player, of course, and Chris, you've been traveling with this team for many years now too, and there's always been this undercurrent of, you know, the support is there, Bills fans travel, but it seems like with the ascendance of the team, certainly, and their Super Bowl chances, and with this city in particular, right? It's one of those things, like, everybody heard about what happened there 2 years ago and how it seemed like Bills fans took over the city and the stadium. And so it makes sense that now with a year off, with last year, like, you know, they have 6,000 or 8,000 people in the stands for this game last year when the Bills visited Tennessee, everybody getting back to it, that people would want to show up and, like, go be a part of this.
Yeah, and it's a destination road trip, too. I mean, people made a full weekend out of it knowing they had Monday. And I was joking on One Bills Live with Steve earlier today, you know, in this age where an enormous amount of the population in this country doesn't even go to work anymore, you could have put in a full day of work today and then just go to the game. You can do it
work
online.
Remotely. Yep, right.
It's a great idea. Bulldog, again, we still don't get to go, even though that's out there. We couldn't be doing this there. Okay, well, I'm sure there are good reasons. Eric, what's it worth to the players to have that kind of support?
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. My first experience of it was my rookie year we played down at Carolina, and we played against the Panthers. And I could not believe the amount of Bills fans that traveled to that game. My first away game in the NFL was Monday Night Football out in New England. Not a lot of Bills fans there. And then the first time when we played in Carolina, I got to experience it. And it's truly awesome. I mean, no doubt about it. When you see the support of all the fans at these away games, it's incredible. My last game was the playoff game against Jacksonville, and Bills fans essentially about took that one over in a playoff game. But it's actually really, really special. And so oftentimes, you know, as an offensive lineman, I don't always see what's happening on the play. I don't see the ball carry at all times. So when you're on the road, you know, if there's a big roar that something bad happened essentially to your offense, well, in games like this, you have no idea. You can't tell if it's Bills or Titans fans cheering as the play goes on.
Right. Well, let's talk about the matchup now for a while. The Bills coming off that great win in Kansas City, Chris. This, of course, is the team, though, that dealt them maybe their low point of last season in the game in Nashville. What is last night's, or rather last year's meeting between the Bills and Titans? What does it mean to tonight? Like, how do you use it if you're the Bills? What do you want to do with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you need to get some extra motivation for this game, I don't anticipate there's too many players on this roster who do, but maybe you use it to rebound from the emotional win last week. I think that a lot of the players had invested a lot in that game and finally got the monkey off their back there. And so you know that Coach McDermott is talking about, you know, staying focused on the next game, not having a hangover or a letdown of any kind from last week's big win. And I don't think it was going to take a lot to summon up motivation for this one in light of how the game got moved around on the schedule, off the schedule. You're playing Kansas City. We're going to accelerate your week six game into week five. You'll play Tennessee the next week. Oh, no, wait, you're going to play the Titans after all. We're going to play on a Monday. Oh, no, wait, you're going to play on a Tuesday. Okay, you've got 48 hours. Just get down to Nashville, play those guys on Tuesday. I mean, that knowing how Coach McDermott operates and the routine nature that he tries to apply to keep everything as steady Eddie as possible in a given game week, there's no question that disrupted their mindset. It disrupted the coaches' preparation because they didn't know if they're going to have to prep for Kansas City on 3 days' notice last year. So that whole scheduling mess impacted their play. They'll never use it as an excuse, but I'll guarantee you they are ticked off even now about it.
Well, you know, Tennessee had its own problems that night, right? Having however many players miss the game and all that lack of practice time. So I remember that from these conversations a year ago. Like, what it was with Steve Tasker, I think, Chris.
Yeah.
What to expect from Tennessee. No practicing and all this sort of moving around with their personnel, their roster. You know, 42-16 kind of tells a certain story, but it was kind of fluky how Tennessee racked up all those points. You know, the Bills had some drives that ended in turnovers, and a lot of Tennessee scoring drives were just very quick and short, almost like handed to them. So it wasn't like it was really a mismatch so much.
Yeah,
I
mean, they got some lucky bounces. Eric and I were talking about it earlier on One Bills Live. They got some lucky bounces early. Ball bounces off John Brown's hands. It gets picked off, goes the other way, kind of like Micah Hyde's touchdown last week. And they corralled Derrick Henry very effectively in the run front. They let Ryan Tannehill leak out a little too much, and he got a lot of yards on the ground, including a touchdown run in that game last year. And it was one of those games that just got away from him. And we should also mention the fact that defensively, the difference between last year's starting lineup defensively and this year is in stark contrast. Last year, no Matt Milano, no Tre'Davious White, no Levi Wallace, and no Star Latulele, who had opted out. Those are four starters you're taking off a starting defense. I mean, that's pretty significant.
Eric, we know that the Bills had, you know, I trust that they sort of peaked emotionally with this Chief game. The performance was off the charts, just excellent on both sides of the ball. I wonder how much of a challenge is it to reach that peak week in and week out? Like, it's and what do you do if you suspect that you yourself might not be reaching like the highest high that you need to reach? Is there a particular challenge off of last week going into this game that the Bills needed to be mindful of this week, you think?
You just consume more caffeine pregame to get yourself going. And that's one of the challenges of the NFL. And everybody's good. Anybody can beat anybody week to week. So you have to show up each and every week. And that's part of, honestly, that's just part of being a professional. Each and every week you got to lock back in. And, you know, I think one of the best things that Sean McDermott does is his just daily consistent approach to commitment to excellence. And that's the process that he constantly talks about. And it's become part of the culture there. And so it does become a challenge week to week when you have an emotional win against Kansas City last week. You get home in the middle of the night, so your sleep's kind of jacked up, and that's where having that extra day to prepare for this game helps. But, you know, with the bye week coming up, you know, I think the Bills are going to be just extremely locked in on their performance tonight.
What did you guys think about how in the game, to whatever extent each of us noticed it, and then what we've learned about their approach to that game in Kansas City, how much went into sort of preparing a certain game plan, certain different formations and personnel groups and all these kinds of things for that game? I like, one thing I thought of is I like when it came in the schedule in week five. It sort of allowed for them to do that, the ease with which they won the previous three games. Just a lot has been said and written about how they did that, the many months that went into preparing for Kansas City. And I mean, of course, it was a huge success. I just think it might have been interesting to fans, Chris and Eric, how specifically the Bills geared up for the Chiefs, you know, in terms of all the preparation, all the different things. Of course, the draft picks might have been with the Chiefs in mind as well. So much interesting to learn from all of that went into that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen, like all of last year, for the majority of the year anyway, 10 and 11 personnel made up about 95% of their play calls, where they just opened it up and said, we're throwing, try to stop it. And their run game just wasn't effective enough, which is why they threw the ball on first down more than any other team at football last year. Those numbers are down because they are running the football more effectively. They're still throwing it 57% of the time on first down, but it's not 61-62% like it was last year. And last week, you know, much has been made of the tighter sets, you know, receivers on both sides of the formation, inside the numbers, running or throwing out of 12 personnel, throwing out of 21 personnel last week. I mean, I think it was 48% of their plays last week were in 11 personnel, and then 46% were either in 21 or 12. And that's about as balanced we've seen power formations with, you know, the three or four wide looks. So they definitely threw a big wrinkle into their approach, and it did catch Kansas City off guard, and by the time they realized what they were doing, the game was already out of hand.
Yeah, when you look at the defensive game plan last week, so multiple in their coverages, did a lot of different things, a lot of six-man boxes with just the four D linemen and the two linebackers in there, being conscious to try and prevent the big plays, not letting Tyreek Hill take the top off the defense, give a little bit extra presence to Travis Kelce. And it was executed to perfection, but it's been amazing to me seeing how each week, how different this Bills game plan, especially on the defensive side of the football, can be each and every week. You look at a game like Miami where they pressured Tua and Brissett a ton, bringing extra guys off the edges, and then you go to a game last week where you don't blitz one time in the entire game, and I know that's dictated by Patrick Mahomes being the best quarterback since he's entered the NFL against the blitz, but it's just amazing to me how multiple they can be in their preparations, in their game plans, defensively and offensively.
Really impressive that they did that last week without Matt Milano, too, who, you know, maybe through four weeks had been the best player on that defense. So that's to their credit, too, that they managed to find a way to use A.J. Klein in spots and use Sharon Neal, and they just, you know, found a way to make it work. It seems to me like I was skeptical about just how much the defense had improved because of who they'd played the first 4 weeks. To me, there's no arguing with what they did against the Chiefs. You know, I mean, you can maybe the best you can do is say maybe the Chiefs had a bad night. But, you know, you have a bad night if you're you know, confused and guys don't know where to go. I read a lot about Mahomes saying, you know, a lot of what they do is he and the receivers both deciding what kind of route to run based on the coverages, and that he and the receivers just weren't seeing the same things and making the same decisions often enough to have success. And that's full credit to the Bills.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, you were concerned about Milano being out of the lineup, but, you know, we talk about the continuity on this roster with the starters. The continuity's also there with the reserves. I mean, Jaquan Johnson goes in for Jordan Poyer 2 weeks ago. I mean, he's been on this roster. This is his third season. He's been in this defense, you know, for two-plus years. And you say, oh, this is great, you know. And Saran Neal is, you know, used in a specialized role. He's been here 3-4 years. So even their reserves have been on the roster. They've been ingratiated into the system. And when they're called upon, they're ready. So you could talk about continuity. You could talk about player development. When reserves are called upon, more often than not, they don't just come through where they're like, you know, these guys don't put backups on the field and say, all right, let's just hope this guy doesn't kill us. They put backups on the field, and they make plays.
Yeah, I like that point about the safety. I mean, they won that game 40-0, by the way, as well. Like the defensive line, that got some press that NBC focused on it somewhat last week with the nine players rotating as often as they were and all the snaps, just the depth up front there. Then you have Hyde and Poyer at safety who just, I mean, yes, there was this game where Poyer missed, but they just have been always there for McDermott since this all started. I mean, what a luxury to have those two guys play the way they do. I was watching, like maybe you guys were, the end of the game yesterday in London, and the Jaguars in a tie after a Miami timeout threw this tight little pass. Chenault went to the ground, got touchdown 1 second, gave them a chance to make a field goal, which they made for the win. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself watching it, if Hyde and Poyer are the safeties on that play, especially after the timeout, the worst thing that's going to happen for the Bills is Chenault is going to catch that pass, and they're not going to touch him. And the second's going to tick off, and then that's the end of regulation, and you thought you were so smart. I mean, I don't know. Of course, that's just a guess on my part. But, I mean, is there any way to really express how valuable each of them, or together, they have been to all this?
Yeah, take that one, Eric.
Yeah, I was just going to say, those guys are so valuable to the scheme. I mean, they confuse guys like Tom Brady, and they just have incredible chemistry the way, you know, they'll end up in a two shell, and Micah Hyde or Poyer's almost on the line of scrimmage before the play sometimes, and you know it just gives them a lot of flexibility defensively when you know how smart both those guys are. They're so comfortable in the scheme. I mean, rarely is this defense ever giving up big plays, and those two are the reason for it. They're also great. I mean, when they come in pressure looks, when they pressure off the edges, they're great. They're great against the run. Those two. It's hard to express how valuable those two are.
Yeah, and just to dovetail off of that, I remember 2 years ago on a conference call with Belichick before a Bills-Patriots game, We asked him, you know, just how those two work so effectively as a tandem. And you want to talk about a five-minute dissertation on Poyer and Hyde. He went into it, you know, and really got deep into the nuts and bolts of what they do. But he said the most amazing thing about how they disguise is how they are essentially out of position at the snap of the football in terms of what their assignment is, and somehow they get back to where they're supposed to be in time. And that was when Brady was still on the roster in New England. So color Bill Belichick impressed with what these two guys do as a tandem.
Well, those guys, like Mike mentioned, are two of the first, maybe the two first free agents that were signed when Sean McDermott got this job before the 2017 season. How about the newest guy who was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week in Gregory Rousseau? I mean, the play he made on the interception speaks for itself. Three sacks to lead the team. How much, Chris, do you think they're surprised by how ready to be an impactful player Rousseau is this soon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we've had a chance to ask Brandon Bean that. I know Eric talks to him periodically, so maybe he already has an answer. But I can't imagine that they thought he would be AFC Defensive Player of the Week by week five. You know, I know they had a lower first-round pick that was on the fast track, too, in Tre'Davious White, who was picked 27 in the draft, and he took off like a rocket right off the bat. But just based on Rousseau's body of work, which essentially was 1 year as a starter followed by an opt-out year, yeah. I can't believe they envisioned he would be this impactful this soon. But once he demonstrated it in training camp and in the preseason, it's like, all right, you're telling us you're ready. Let's go. I mean, if they have guys that they believe can help right away, they don't care about experience. They care about results. And he's provided results here early and often.
Right. And this is a guy in Greg Rousseau who was a high school wide receiver, you know, barely even lifted weights in high school. I covered him his freshman year when he was at Miami. I was calling a game for ACC Network, and I talked to him on the phone one-on-one throughout the week, and he was saying essentially his high school weight room was like a little shed, so no one even went and worked out. So he's new to the position. Like you said, he takes off all of last year. But what's amazing to me, and this is development, this is coaching, the way he plays the run even, you know, for a young defensive end, you know, as athletic and as big as he is, like you would assume that at times he's going to flash in his pass rushing reps. But what he was able to do in controlling offensive linemen last week and for them to be able to play with just six guys in the box and to stop the Chiefs' run game like they did, a lot of that is from play like guys like Greg Rousseau who are winning one-on-one matchups, containing the edge, and then he's so long he can grab onto the ball carriers as they're going by. I mean, I was impressed last week with his rush defense than as I was with, you know, the splash play with the interception or the pass rush reps that he was able to win.
Is that going to be Taylor Lewan tonight, or is he on the other side? What do we got there, Eric?
Taylor Lewan's their left tackle. Yeah. Ty Sombrilo is on the right side for them. And this offensive line for Tennessee has been a train wreck this year. They've given up 20 sacks on the season, and that's with a pretty mobile quarterback in Ryan Tannehill. They've given up 20 sacks already this season. They only gave up 24 all of last season, and this is a team that runs the football a ton. So it's not like they're even throwing the ball at that high of a clip to be able to justify those sack numbers. This could be a game tonight that you see the Bills. I don't want to say that they'll be able to rush the passer like they did necessarily against Miami, and you're always going to have to be conscious of fitting your run gaps first when you're playing the Titans and you face Derrick Henry. But this is a game where the Bills defensive line could come out looking pretty dang good. I had a conversation with Alex Smith, who's covering the game pregame for ESPN. I had a conversation with him earlier today, and he was saying he thinks a lot of the O-line issues is from Arthur Smith moving on, and Arthur Smith was so great in his scheming as an offensive coordinator for the Titans, that made the offensive line look even better, which, you know, I could tell you over the years, me playing in certain schemes, there's schemes that are more friendly to the offensive line, and he was attributing some of their lack of success up front on the offensive line to Arthur Smith being gone.
Yeah, but Eric's also right, because this is a line that's beat up, and Steve and I were having this conversation on the show earlier today. They have a much different philosophy in how to deal with their injured players. If guys can suit up and play, they put him back out on the field. I mean, Taylor Lewan's got a toe injury. He's not right. Saffold's been dealing with an injury at left guard. And their right tackle, David Kessenberry, is a new addition in the starting lineup this year. And Tyson Brelo, who Eric mentioned, up and retired this past week. So they've lost depth in addition to having to play guys that are banged up. I mean, if you look at some of their film, Luan will come out for a series, kind of make sure his toe's okay and then get back in the game. Saffold will sit out for a series or a possession and then come back in after he's kind of collected himself again. And so is center Ben Jones. He's playing hurt too. So it's going to be really interesting to see how well this Titans line is going to be able to hold up, especially knowing they've got less depth now with Cimbrelo abruptly retiring last week. It's ridiculous.
Well, I blame my spotter chart for that, because they still had him as their starting right tackle for this game. That's
my.
On me.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw. Did you hear the bus
rip
there? The tires just running over.
Right.
Me throwing someone under the bus.
Yes.
Whatever happens tonight, Luan will probably have something to say. That's happened before. He had, I think, five of those 20 sacks are Chandler Jones in the opener. And he was he thanked Chandler Jones after that game for helping him learn how to play football or something like that.
Yeah, and pay attention to Jerry Hughes tonight, because him, Taylor Lewan, and Jerry Hughes, every time we would play the Titans, we would have to talk to Jerry like, okay, you cannot get a personal foul in this game. It's because he's going to do something to tick you off. You guys fight after almost every single play. Just please don't get a personal foul, Jerry.
Good little nugget right there. All right, we'll get back to you guys shortly. Chris Brown, One Bills Live, Bills Insider for BuffaloBills.com. Eric Wood, color commentator for tonight, and his podcast, What's Next with Eric Wood. We'll have them back with us as more of the Duntire Roundtable continues. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We are within 2 hours of kickoff. Bills and Titans tonight. Stay tuned. This is the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Monday Night Football, the Bills and the Titans, back-to-back primetime road games for the Bills. Last week, a huge success, 38-20 win in Kansas City. Tonight, Tennessee, 8:15. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog with you on Countdown to Kickoff. Coming up, John Murphy and Eric Wood with the play-by-play, Sal Capaccio as well. Sal will join Bulldog and me next hour before we get to kickoff. And joining us now on our Duntire Roundtable, once again, Chris Brown, One Bills Live co-host and Bills insider for BuffaloBills.com, and longtime Bills star center Eric Wood, who, of course, is on the broadcast tonight. This is where Bulldog and I are not pregame regulars. We are postgame hosts, but when the Bills play at night, we do pregame. And I'm always sort of interested in this one. I like that they give us this, Bills by the numbers. Brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow. Chris and Eric, my favorite thing about the NFL season so far, maybe, is the MVP race. So last Sunday, Kyler Murray, 5-0, he's the favorite. Sunday night, Josh Allen, he's the new favorite. Plus 550, there are some numbers. Then Monday night, Lamar Jackson, he didn't make it to favorite, but a huge game in their win over Indianapolis. Yesterday, Dak Prescott moves to the top with a win in Foxborough. That's not the whole list. I doubt I would bet everything I have that this is not what is on Josh Allen's mind right now. But, Eric and Chris, how do you like his chances?
I think they're pretty good. He's certainly going to have enough national exposure. I think that's part of the equation. You know, another national game here tonight. I think that's what helped put him on the radar last year. You know, the four primetime games they had last year and the way he performed in those games. I mean, they wiped the floor with the Patriots in Week 16 last year. That went a long way in vaulting Josh Allen into the MVP conversation, as well as the San Francisco game that was played in Arizona.
Right.
So exposure is half the battle. And that's why Lamar Jackson kind of vaulted up in terms of the numbers that you mentioned there, because the guy's sitting there in prime time and throwing for 442 yards. So, yeah. But I think Josh will have a good look at it, because he's the modern-day quarterback. And just for the record, guys, they should just change the award to MVQB. I mean, is anybody but a QB ever going to win this thing ever again? I mean, Derrick Henry's the only last hope. Maybe if he runs for 2,100 yards, which is what he's on pace for right now, along with 482 carries, which seem superhuman, but that's a whole nother conversation. But MVQB is what they should change it to.
Adrian Peterson, the last non-quarterback to win the MVP back in 2012.
Yeah. Oh,
go ahead.
Henry is where I was going to steer to here. Like, if there's anybody that may be able to lay claim to it, I mean, he's carried the ball more than 50 times more than the next most running back in the league. I mean, he's got 142 carries. He's such a unique talent. The size, the speed, the power. I mean, there's just a lot there. I wonder, like, how long – he's so durable, too. Mike's made the point all afternoon here. He just plays all the games. And just to take that pounding, it seems like he's really a bit of a unicorn in the league today.
Oh, he definitely is. I mean, and he's as big as I am. He's 6'3", 6'4". He's listed at 247 pounds. I'm not built quite the same way as him, but he is.
Anymore.
Yeah, he's a truck out there. And what he's done so far this season has been extremely impressive. And you know, so much was made of the stiff arm on Josh Norman last year in this game. That became the lasting highlight of the game. But the Bills did great defending him last year.
Yep.
19 carries for 57 yards, 3 yards per carry. The Bills did a good job. And, you know, tonight when you're talking about the best player on the Titans, that's where all your focus has got to be. But he is truly impressive.
Eric, do you think he could win MVP?
I mean, he could, you know, but honestly, kind of to Chris's point, you know, the quarterbacks are going to get most of the attention. I think he'd have to do something. He'd have to go over 2,000 yards. Yep. He would have to break some type of record. The Titans would have to have a lot of success too, I believe.
Right.
And then you would need to see some dissension from the Josh Allens, the Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson. You'd have to see some bad play as well from some of the quarterbacks that are front running it right now.
You mentioned Adrian Peterson, Mike, and he went over 2,000 yards to win it in 2012. And if you remember, he literally willed the Vikings into the playoffs in the final game of the regular season. I mean, that's about as headlining as a running back can get.
Right. None of this is to mention Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's not even – like, there's a lot of quarterbacks up there that would maybe have to falter. What's one thing that maybe is a little unfair about the award, if that's the right word, is that judgments are made about the rest of your team and, you know, what kind of advantages or disadvantages you face. I think Allen's Bills team is so complete. And you have the Diggs and the receiver depth piece, including Sanders now. And if the defense is great, right? Like, that might work against them in comparison with maybe a Jackson or even, like, I don't know about Prescott for this. But, you know, the media who vote on it will be like, well, what happens in their mind? Like, what happens to your team if that guy's not there? And the Bills arguably have the second best quarterback in the AFC East on their team. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're still pretty good. So that would have nothing to do with Allen's actual play. But I do think it comes up and comes to mind in the MVP vote.
Yeah, Prescott's got a pretty complete roster, too.
Yes.
They have a defense now, and he's got a myriad of receivers he can tap into, including
sure.
a nice up-and-coming tight end in Dalton Schultz. So, you know, you can probably make the same argument about him. But, yeah, there are other quarterbacks out there that probably don't have the supporting cast or the defense that Josh and seemingly Prescott do.
Right, for whatever that's worth. We wouldn't have the inactives yet, would we?
No, and I don't know that we'll have him before Eric and I are gone.
Okay. A.J. Brown was a question mark. The reports have it that he'll play. He was added or re-added to the injury report with an illness yesterday. He tweeted today about swearing off fast food, but supposedly he's good to go. What kind of a difference does he make? I know he's super good with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones together, which they haven't been able to do that too much yet, the Titans. They could be, you know, dangerous down the field if that's how they choose to play it.
Yeah, I just wonder how much they're going to run a 32-year-old Julio Jones fresh off a hamstring injury on 9 routes tonight to try to stretch the field. They may tap into somebody else to do that. And A.J. Brown had a very telling comment to the Tennessee media late in the week. This was before he came down with whatever illness fast food gave him. He essentially said he is not going to get his full workload of snaps until week 10. His hamstring injury is still not right. And talking to a couple of Tennessee reporters, they said, you know, in the game that he returned to last week to the lineup, he did not look good. He didn't look himself, I guess is what I should term it. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they tap into other guys to try to stretch the field, because I think they're worried about, you know, A.J. Brown yanking something again or re-injuring. And Julio Jones, we can't forget, is 32 years old now. And he missed the last two games with a hamstring injury also. And Eric can probably speak to hamstring injuries better than I can. But it's the explosiveness when you demand the muscle to explode for you, you know, burst and all that stuff. That's when you re-injure hamstrings.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Chris. I was told by Bobby Petrino at one point in college that none of the offensive linemen on our team were fast enough to ever pull a hamstring. So I don't have a lot of experience with hamstring injuries, but they're something that you always have to be careful with. And they're one of those things that's like the twitchier the player, the C.J. Spillers, the Sammy Watkins, the A.J. Browns, the Julio Jones, those guys, they obviously get more of these soft tissue injuries and hamstrings. You always just got to be careful with them, because if you keep – if you don't give it enough time to rest, you just keep kicking that can down the road, and then you never get your player at full strength the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would think this illness could impact that, right? I mean, if he had some sort of food poisoning, he was talking about fast food, if that's what the illness was, there could be dehydration with that, and that's not ideal if you're coming back from a hamstring injury.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Yeah, I mean, you need your muscles to be hydrated. He's probably doing IVs and taking potassium pills, because, you know, potassium pills help you retain water in your muscles, which reduces the likelihood of them cramping or seizing up on you, or, God forbid, getting re-injured. But it's like I said, this seems to be the approach with the Titans. If you can get yourself out there and play, you're going to play. Whereas if you look at the Bills, they err on the side of caution with anybody. Milano's a perfect example. You know, he felt a little twinge in his hamstring against Houston. You're out. Get out of the game. We got this game in hand. You're not playing. And you know what? You're not going to play next week either against Kansas City, even though it's a giant game. They won the game anyway, fortunately for them. And they eased him through the practice week in a limited capacity. It seems like Tennessee has a much more archaic way of handling their injured players than the Bills do.
Well, that'll be interesting to monitor if they are in a race this year. You know, Vrabel's been there a while, and they've kind of topped out in the playoffs. The Bills, with their schedule, may have the luxury of continuing to do that. You know, you point out that they were winning easily when that started, Poyer being held out like he was, perhaps. By the way, speaking of Tennessee, Eric, are you a Vrabel fan? Your career's overlapped. I don't know what you think of him.
I am a Vrabel. I'm a fan of him as a person. I had him on my podcast last offseason. I would always connect him with him at the Kentucky Derby. He was a part of the group that got the yearly invite from Tom Brady. A lot of respect for him as a player, his transition into coach, and just being able to lead an organization, instill a culture. You know, even as you look around, they want to have a culture of toughness here. As you look around the stadium, it's plastered on all of the walls around the stadium, Tennessee Tough. And, I think it's impressive what he's been able to build in Tennessee. And, I do like him. I was actually talking to Murph earlier, and I was telling him, I said, he's one of those guys where he'll, like, kind of mess with you and crack jokes on you and poke a little fun at you, but he's not, like, that funny, and he's not, like, that bubbly. So you're like, are you being a jerk?
Or
are we having fun with each other? But, I really appreciate his career as a player, as a coach, and he's always treated me extremely well.
That's the point I hope to get to with you, where I can joke with you but not tell you I'm kidding. Like, ha, 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 LOL. Like, every time I try to, I just have to give it up right away. I have to tell Eric that I'm kidding, because I don't want him to, be
squash
like,
wash your head like a grape.
What's wrong with him? What did I say? who needs this guy?
Yeah, well, Shope, you and Bulldog, it's like we spend time together every single week. We've done it for so many years, but we don't get to see each other that much in person.
Yeah.
And when you're not face-to-face, sometimes it's like a text message joke.
Good point.
A lot gets lost when you can't see a facial expression.
And I bet it's even more true if you're at the Kentucky Derby in all those fancy clothes and, drinking mint juleps and gambling. Anything goes. All
no
right.
doubt.
All right. Any last thoughts on the matchup, guys, you're sort of thinking about, either of you?
I'm very interested to see how the secondary of the Titans is going to handle the Bills' receiving core. They're going to be shorthanded tonight. Christian Fulton, their starting corner, is out. He was declared out on Friday. They're going to be depending a lot on some young and inexperienced players. outside of Janoris Jenkins in terms of Chris Jackson, who's going to play in the slot and maybe rotate a little bit with rookie Elijah Molden, who's a great player. He's just inexperienced. And Caleb Farley may have to move into the starting lineup in place of Fulton. We'll have to see what they decide to do there. But I'm just worried that Chris Jackson's going to get a master class on how to defend a slot receiver and not have a lot of success against Cole Beasley tonight.
Yeah, that's a matchup I'm focused on as well. And then, you know, this Bills defense going up against Derrick Henry, what does it look like? I talked on One Bills Live today about how I think you're going to see some pressure off the edges, similar to what we saw the Bills use against Miami, bringing whether it be Taron Johnson, the safeties. A lot of times Leslie Frazier will do that to kind of bottle in a running back and it essentially just force you to play to the middle of the field. And then if they obviously, with a guy as big as Derrick Henry, you want to get him going east and west as much as you can. If he gets downhill on you, he's falling forward, and he's going to get those. You know, they might not be 30-yard chunk plays, but it's 6, 7, 8 over and over and over. So get him running east and west. And I'm excited to see how this Bills rush defense will do. This is a really good test for him.
Eric Wood, Chris Brown, thank you both.
You got it, guys.
Thank you, guys.
We did not get to the inactives, but that's coming. They're brought to you by Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Sideline with a strain, sprain, or break. Get to Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Bills and Titans coming up. Much more pregame coverage and discussion still to come. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Stay with us. This is Buffalo Bills football.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.